advocate of the High Court. I'm a professional woman with strong leadership capability. I have a clean criminal record, and I would be purely transparent in my dealings. I'm apolitical and unbiased. Therefore, my judgments won't be biased. I have acquired exceptional reporting, analytical communication, negotiation, problem-solving, and relational building skills over the years of services. I served on different portfolios and management levels over 22 years within government of the Republic of South Africa, as well as promoting the Republic globally and building international relations with the People's Republic of China. My current portfolio involves a strong active record of 11 years in senior management within immigration branch at the Department of Home Affairs. I know the operations of government, including policies like the medium-term strategic framework, the implementation, which is the implementation plan of the National Development Plan 2030. I've got 8 years working experience within international law, human rights, and government and governance environment. Therefore, I'm a human rights law expert, including immigration and refugee law. I worked as a prosecutor for 3 years. I was part of the delegation which visited China in 2004 with the then advocate Mushwana, because I was working at the Office of the Public Protector by then. I presented papers internationally on refugee policy in Germany and within the Southern Africa. Participated at various UNHCR or EXCOM meetings in Geneva, Switzerland, and at the African Union meetings in Ethiopia relating to refugees. On one of the key achievements there was the adoption of the AU Convention relating to displaced persons in Africa, and as well represented South Africa at various SADC refugee commissioners meetings. Whilst in China, I facilitated the establishment of visa outsource centers, both in Beijing and Shanghai. This included standardization of operations at the two missions. I improved customer service and service delivery to deepen political relations between the two countries. I also negotiated the opening of more offices. Due to excellent service delivery and the impact I made with the country, I promoted better relations between the two countries, and that was also published in the local newspapers. In South Africa, I led various humanitarian and counter-xenophobia projects in conjunction with providing strategic and leadership to refugee services across the country, especially Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo, where refugee reception offices were based. Some of the achievements include participating at the signing of the tripartite plan of operation for the repatriation of Angolans refugees, and also I was appointed as a board member of the Refugee Relief Fund Board by the Minister of Social Development, monitored the rollout of integrated biometric system for the 5 refugee reception offices, made sure increased the capacity of the offices and manage the budget of the offices. Due to political instability in Zimbabwe around 2006 and 2007, I managed to give strategic direction for processing applications for asylum, which spiked from 50,000 to more than 100,000 in that particular year. Introduced same-day adjudication of asylum claims, managed to reduce the approval rate recently by making sure then that we have good quality country of origin reports and make sure that whoever deserves to be granted refugee status gets that. I was currently the project manager to revamp the Maribasstad Refugee Reception Office. Whilst working at the Office of the Public Protector, I managed to establish the Gauteng office, which is based at Constitution Hill, as well as making sure then that I liaise with various municipal offices around Soweto to make sure that there are clinics which are open there. Recommended ways to improve service delivery to the Compensation Commissioner on complaints received, investigated disclosure of HIV status of patients without their consent and steps taken by the Health Professions Council, and produced a report, investigated undue delays in the payment of unemployment insurance fund. Other experience include serving on the task team that drafted the country report on the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, which was submitted to the African Commission on Human and People's Rights in 1998. I was the member of the National Action Plan on Human Rights Coordinating Committee, which was assisting the drafting of the National Action Plan on Human Rights, which was deposited to the United Nations High Commissioner in 1998. I drafted the chapter on management of asylum seekers and refugees in the current immigration green paper, which is currently out for consultation. Given an opportunity to hold the Public Protector's Office, I will assist all spheres of government to improve service delivery, assist in the implementation of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy to eradicate corruption, assist in improving South Africa's ranking in the Transparency International Perception Index, which to below 50, because currently is around 72 out of the 177 countries. Introduce innovative ways to deliver services promptly within the limited resources. I will end my presentation, Chairperson, and before going into the role and functions of the Public Protector.
Okay, thank you very much. You are happy with ending there, because I'm going to now take the questions from the members. You are happy with that, Busisiwe?
Yes, I have some expertise which I've mentioned under the Office of the Public Protector, okay, or what solutions I'll bring to the table if I'm appointed to the post of the Public Protector. Maybe then as well to make sure then on a speedy resolution of investigations by the investigators. I know that there are capable investigators at the Office of the Public Protector currently, but making sure then as well that do they have service delivery indicators? Are they performing according to their the agreed upon service delivery indicators? And then to increase access of the Office of the Public Protector, because a lot of people are not aware what role will the Public Protector play. The Public Protector will make sure then that a person who doesn't have a voice will have a voice in the management of the government or in the running of the services and promoting good governance in government. Public Protector only investigate any conduct, undue or improper conduct, which is happening in the public sphere. Therefore, the Public Protector doesn't have any role to investigate court decisions, but it's purely on the maladministration, abuse of power, and make sure then that people enjoy the democracy which is provided. But then in making sure as well that the services are accessible to all persons and communities, that will be done by making sure then that the office is extended through all. In fact, the main important thing is to make sure that if a person can go to a district office, for instance, a district magistrate court, the person can be able to be assisted there. Though I know currently the Office of the Public Protector, a person can lodge a complaint by phoning and getting advice, but some people you'll find that they can't have access to telephones, but they would have access to a local district office where they can lodge their complaint. I mean, it's to utilize those district offices or be in partnership with government. And the key important thing is that the role of the Public Protector is to make sure that is accessible to the community, but again, is there to strengthen the constitutional democracy. It's not there to fight against the state, it's there to assist the state, especially members of the National Assembly who are supposed to be giving voice to the voiceless, is to make sure then that as the Public Protector, you assist that people enjoy good governance and enjoy democracy. But then again, going forward, engaging government and on all structures to make sure that when there's foresight meetings, SALGA, you engage and make sure that even traditional leaders and traditional heads, they know what role can the Public Protector play to make sure then that people who can't access the services can access the services of the Public Protector. I think I'll end there, Chairperson, and wait for the questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mkhwebane. Can I take the first round of questions, members? I see Honorable Breitenbach, I see Honorable Msimang, Honorable Swart, Honorable Kuranoff, Honorable Masondo, Honorable Van Damme, Honorable Bongo, and Honorable Maisela. I would start with you in the second round, Honorable Mutapo. If you can remember your sequencing members, I will appreciate that. Ms. Mkwabane, if you could kindly just take the notes as members are asking you questions, and if at any stage you don't, maybe you forgot the question, you are most welcome to ask. I will assist if you didn't get the question. Thank you.
Definitely.
Over to you, Honorable Blattenbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Ms. Mkwabane.
Good afternoon.
You're currently employed as an analyst at State Security Agency, is that correct?
Yes, it's correct.
Forgive me because I'm not familiar with the job descriptions, but is it not a demotion from the director at the Department of Home Affairs?
Must I answer immediately or
no, you can
I
write
can
it
wait.
Down.
Okay.
And then my second question, you describe yourself in your questionnaire as a person of prestige and influence. Would you just elaborate on that for me, please? And then finally, your master's research has been outstanding for some 6 years now. Have you completed your master's degree yet or not? And if not, why not? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Mrs. Mkwabane. My name is Themba Msimang. I would like to know if you have been engaged in the robust practice of the law, either as an advocate or as an attorney. I'm asking this because this is an essential requirement. I am aware that you have had 3 years' experience as a public prosecutor, but I want you to please cite other instances where you were involved with the practice of the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Scott. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Advocate. Just to ask you a little bit, you were with the Public Protector's Office for a number of years. I think it was from 1999 to 2005, is that right, as an investigator? And at that stage, what caused you to leave? To go to, was it a promotion? I presume it was a promotion or something. But just at that stage, the dynamics around the Public Protector's Office already going back then with financial constraints, number one, and we understand it was a long time before the court judgments about remedial action. But if you could just explain your experience there and how you would now do things differently if you were the Public Protector. In as much as we've now got jurisprudence that is very clear about the remedial actions of the public protector being binding. Going back then already, you would have experienced financial constraints as well. We know that the public protector has got severe funding constraints. How would you deal with that now if you were appointed as the public protector? Now, interestingly, you also have experience in the Human Rights Commission. Do you see that there is a lot of overlapping between the work of the Public Protector and the Human Rights Commission? And that was referred to in the Cader Asmal Commission as well. And how would you address that overlapping so that one carefully uses the limited resources of the Public Protector's Office should you be appointed to that position? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just two questions. The one, I'm here just in front of you. Advocate?
Okay.
All
the people that should be asking you questions are
Do you have any active business interest that might have a conflict of interest if you are appointed to the public protector office? First question. And the second one, in your opinion, what constitutes the independence of the public protector's office?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, I must say that through Chairperson, I've heard the mention of local government, in SALGA in particular, after a long, long, long time. I'm sure the issue of intergovernmental relations really kicks in. In what way would you envisage working with organized local government? Just an elaboration on that. And given the fact that you have had some interaction with the Office of the Public Protector, what are the key changes that you'll envisage where it become a real possibility that you get appointed as a public protector?
Masondo, Honorable Fantam.
Thanks, Chairperson. Afternoon, Advocate. In your questionnaire, you say that you believe that the public protector can assist the state in monitoring the implementation of the NDP to institutionalize long-term planning, forging a people-centered government. The reason I'm asking this, I just want to understand what you see the role of the public protector being. Is it an oversight role over government, or how else do you understand it? I just want to understand how you see the role of the public protector in South Africa. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Pongo.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Advocate. The Public Protectors Act envisages that the person who must be appointed must be fit and proper. So in discharging some of your responsibilities, you are expected to take decisions that are without fear, favor, or prejudice. So I want to know, but what is your general understanding of this that I have said? But secondly, that fit and proper is also related to business interest. And in the questionnaire that we have gave you to fill, we have requested that you provide any information that relates to financial or otherwise that the committee may need to know, and you said no. I want you to comment, to give a general comment on that. I think for now, Chair, I'll just stick to that until later.
Okay, Honorable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair. I would like you to explain how you are going to sort this problem that you have mentioned in your presentation. That I quote, "Our country is faced with the challenges of poverty and unemployment and inequality. This is a result of the scourge of apartheid, and it is still a young democracy to redress the imbalance of the past. Government is not taking a radical approach to redress the economic imbalances between races." Now, this is a very mundane thing that everybody is quoting now and then. How do you expect to use your experiences if you are appointed as a public protector to redress this thing, and what radical steps would you envisage taking? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If I can just add on those questions, just to complete this round, you said that the relationship between the public protector and the state shouldn't be antagonistic, and it should be a supportive and an assisting in the process. Now, I just want you to share with this committee, how would you deal with a situation where that relationship becomes antagonistic? How would you handle it? And what steps will you take to ensure that you are still fulfilling your mandate as the public protector, but at the same time striking the balance with ensuring that the relationship does not necessarily become antagonistic? I know that it might, it's a very difficult, there is a very thin line in that, but we would like to hear what you have to say. But the good news is that we've received comments from members of the public on a variety of people, and there was nothing bad about you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, panel members, for the questions. The question by Advocate Breitenbach, analyst, demotion. It's not a demotion, ma'am. It's a different kind of expertise or experience. Yes, I've worked as a senior manager in the Department of Home Affairs for 11 years. And in that process, I was a director, even acted as a chief director in that particular process. But then, yes, I was dealing a lot with immigration law and even refugee law. But then going then to work in the state security agency is to make sure then that we protect the Constitution. I mean, it's still the constitutional matters. It's still making sure that the Constitution is protected. So it's not at all. And again, working there is to make sure that I use my expertise, which I got at the Department of Home Affairs, of refugee law and immigration law, since you know that the country sometimes we are faced with challenges of immigration, challenges of refugees, and to make sure then that I use my expertise in that aspect. It's not. So yes, it's a specialized field. It's not a situation where you are a manager or a chief director, then you are having subordinates and working. But then here you're strictly a professional. So the issue of prestige and influence, prestige is meaning my integrity. I've made sure then that as well I do my work with integrity, making sure then that as a public servant I serve the public, making sure then as well that whatever I initiate or implement is indeed achievable. In my work in the Department of Home Affairs, I've acquired a lot of achievement, being the National Director of Refugees, and as well not having the capacity, as I've indicated earlier, that with the limited capacity I had joining the Department of Home Affairs of 20 officials, increasing it to 300 officials. And again, as I've mentioned, that the number of asylum seekers from Zimbabwe increased drastically when I joined the department back then, and again, the challenges of foreigner attacks during those times. But then I made sure then that I work with integrity and making sure as well that there is issues of influence, making sure that you use your influence as a person of integrity to make sure that the concerns of the vulnerable people are addressed. On the issue of MBL, I was standing for 6 years. Yes, I was supposed to complete 20 years, submit my research. I was deployed to China, as I've mentioned in my CV. I was a counselor there for 4 years. Unfortunately, moving to China, never realized that when I write my final exam in Beijing, I had to change with UNISA to be a foreign student. Therefore, I never did that. Then that was the problem, because then I was deregistered. And I had to have a process. Unfortunately, I couldn't submit my dissertation with the work challenges as well, being in a foreign country. I couldn't do that. I came back in 2014, and I hope I'll find time to finally, but I've finished with my coursework. It's just that is the issue of the research. Professor Msimang, robust practice as a lawyer and an attorney, yes, as you've seen in my CV, I've practiced as a prosecutor. The fortunate or unfortunate part is that I think that then, well, the government paid for my bursary during the Kwandebele government. And then the condition was that come back and work for the government, which was a good thing because then you wouldn't struggle to say I'm coming back as a qualified graduate and having to look for employment. Therefore, my stream was then into government. I did that. From there, then I worked in the Department of Justice, drafting a lot. I mean, I work in the international directorate. By then, it was a directorate dealing with extradition law. That's where I started dealing with a lot of human rights issues, drafting the country reports. So my engagement or robust engagement was based on making sure then that you defend or you speak for the defenseless in making sure that whatever legislations we have, whatever conventions we've acceded to as a country is to make sure that as a country we comply to and whoever is meant to be protected is protected. Whilst working at the Department of Home Affairs, we had a lot of litigation cases against the department, especially on refugee matters and a lot of delays, but as well making sure then that on the administration part or the management part, then we didn't have backlogs. That was my efficiency. But then again, making sure then that I give information based on law, what the department or what government is expected as far as international conventions are concerned. So that was my involvement in making sure then that I portray or I make sure that the law which is supposed to be protecting the vulnerables are protected. Yes, I've never practiced. I was admitted as an advocate in 1997 based on my experience within the Department of Justice then. Mr. Swart, on the public protector, what caused me to leave and the financial constraints, definitely it was a promotion. I was a senior investigator, and a senior investigator is at the level 12 in government, which is a deputy director level, so I was getting a promotion to be a director level. And the issue of financial constraints and explain how differently I would make sure that I work then with the current jurisprudence. The most important thing is that with the current constitutional court case, it has made sure that South Africans are aware of the powers and role and functions of the public protector. It has also made us public servants or government officials and politicians what is the role of the public protector and the functions of the public protector. And it also made sure then that the remedial actions of the public protector are not just recommendations, but they are enforceable unless you take the public protector for review. So therefore, that has made the duty of the public protector very simple. And simple in the sense that if you've got a remedial action as a department, you either enforce it or if you take the public protector to court, then that's a challenge because it will drain on the financial implication of the public protector. But the challenge then was that you find that there's a lot of recommendations or the remedial actions which government departments or state organs never implemented. And you find that it takes resources from the office again to follow up on those because, I mean, it's not clear in the Public Protector Act what to do if, yes, you need to then enforce or have more resources to make sure that you oblige that state organ to enforce. In this instance, the EFF and DA took the president to court. But then you'll find that the public protector didn't have the resources to maybe say to the court of law, can you enforce this on my behalf? So that's the difference. And I think now it will be very easy to work with government. And as I said, that as a public protector, you are there to support and strengthen. And as a government department, a state organ, you need to understand that the role is there to support and strengthen. So making sure how to deal with financial constraints is coming up with innovative ways of doing work. Because, as I said, innovative ways in making sure that why should I spend a lot of resources going out, approaching media to say I'm buying a space to make sure that you educate the public about this particular information. Why can't I partner with state organs like your SABC? Why can't I partner with even independent media? I mean, I'm not promoting Power FM, but during Women's Month, they called on Public Protector, the AU chairperson, to come and speak. Why not use those platforms to make sure that we disseminate the information? Why not as well use the local radio stations? We've got a lot of them which are accessible to a person in the rural area. My mother is listening to Ikwekwezi throughout the day. Why can't we use that platform in her language to understand what is expected from her, or what can this office, important office, can do for her? So I think it's using innovative ways and make sure then that we deliver our service. I mean, we have investigators who'll deliver on time, who'll have service delivery indicators, who are trained, and as well, possibly, if it means engaging government to get more internship, we've got a lot of qualified graduates who we can empower, or as well, working through the Department of Justice to make sure that how can we also utilize their offices, I mean, all those magistrates' court, which are available even in the deeper rural areas, to make sure that as well that is accessible, instead of maybe carrying the burden on our own. On the issue of Human Rights Commission overlapping with a public protector, I think on that particular aspect, the public protector is more on good governance, issues of maladministration, issues of abuse of power, issues of undue benefit, issues of undue delay. I mean, if you've applied for your UIF or you've applied for your SASA, why must it take longer than 3 months when you are promised it to be processed within 7 days? Therefore, if you cannot get any joy by yourself engaging, why not come to the public protector? But the Human Rights Commission is more on your human rights-related issues. I mean, being discriminated based on being on your gender, on your race, on issues of racism, issues of inequality. So that's where they come in more. And I think there is a Gada Asmal report where he also proposed that if we can take all the other institutions like your Gender Commission, your Youth Commission, and the commission which deals with languages and culture, and make it one, because, I mean, it makes sense, because it deals with all human rights-related issues. Whereas the private protector is more on service delivery, because then when it comes to delay in providing a service, then that's where they come in. Mr. Korenov, business interest conflict. Being a government official, I mean, you declare your interests every year before April. Therefore, the business which I've been a director's anyway, they lapsed long time ago, when you were still trying to say, I'm working, but possibly I can, but I have never had any business outside of getting my own salary, being a government official, being paid the salary which was sufficient for my existence, and again, being exposed to being a counselor in China, issuing visas and permits. That's where you are exposed to a lot of conflicts. But then, being a woman of integrity, then I managed not to. The only one which was possibly, if you check from DTI, CIPC, was only one where you find that you are women, ladies, you need to open a social club, you need to put money in, it's like your stockfile, but it never had any interaction or any business. Independence of the public protector, is independent, is only subject to the constitution and the law, but then the independence doesn't mean the public protector is not accountable. Public protector is accountable to the National Assembly. For instance, you are given a budget, you need to indicate out of the 20 million you got, what activities, what investigations you conducted, and did you do those investigations on time? Is it benefiting the persons which they're supposed to benefit? I think there is a thin line there, but the issue is the public protector needs to account on what the state or its people's money, which they need to indicate that this is what we've investigated, this is how we dealt with the money. It doesn't mean then that the issue of accounting to the National Assembly, then the National Assembly needs to dictate you investigate this case, you don't investigate this case, or on the content of their work. Mr. Masondo, on the issue of intergovernmental relations, that's the challenge we're facing in government, being a public servant for so many years, where you'd find that we operate a lot in silos as government, though there is a provision in the Constitution which encourages intergovernmental relations. But it's to make sure then that, as I've said, that, I mean, there's a structure called, like SALGA, involve them in their planning, in their engagement with local municipalities. Make sure as well that if we can work together, the public protector can participate, because there would be, for instance, their summit where you need to come and present. There are investigations. For instance, there are other partner Chapter 9 Institute, like the Auditor General. I mean, look at how many findings against some of the municipalities, the violation of the Municipal Finance Management Act. How do we make sure then that we work together with structures like your SALGA, making sure then that they need to comply to the law, to the regulations, and as well make sure then that when there are service delivery challenges, because sometimes you find that the issue of service delivery challenges at local government level, it leads to a lot of violent protests, which are not necessary, because if then we can learn to engage and be responsive to the communities as quickly as possible, then we wouldn't find such challenges, or listen and respond quickly. But then I think it's to engage them, go to present to their summits, to their strategic planning, to make sure that how can we make sure that in their planning they are also involved and understand the role which the public protector can play and support them. Key challenges envisaged when appointed. I think, as I've said earlier, that a lot of people now are aware what role the public protector needs to play. Again, it might still be the challenge of not enforcing or implementing the remedial actions, but then it's a question of saying in our approach is to be very conciliatory, or even make sure that there's a lot of engagement, people to understand, or public servants to understand what role we need to play. I think we'll overcome any challenge as long as you discuss and sit down and discuss issues and understand what is your role, what is my role, and how we can serve the people who are voiceless or people who cannot defend themselves or cannot engage on themselves. Ms. Van Damme, on the issue of the National Development Plan, the provisions of the National Development Plan is to make sure then that we eradicate corruption. And we've set as government, these are the plans we're having for 2030. Not to say monitoring, because there is a ministry within the presidency which is responsible for that. But again, not to sit as a public protector and say, government, we're sitting behind, we're watching what you're doing, and when you don't reach that, then we investigate. But the fact of the matter is, by strengthening constitutional democracy is to make sure then that people are, we address the issue of the challenges of poverty. If, for instance, you are allocated or you plan to be have developed this particular area, for instance, infrastructure development, by this particular period, and this is the budget which is allocated. Because at the end of the day, is to engage with government to say, we've seen, because the National Development Plan is also saying, can you allocate more resources to make sure that institutions like the Public Protector can make sure that governments or taxpayers' money is utilized for the people on the grassroots level. Therefore, let's, for instance, because the issue of undue delay or maladministration or corruption, there is a lot of money allocated for a certain project, and that particular money is nowhere to be found, or that particular project is no longer happening. Because as the Public Protector, we also need to know what is supposed to be happening to empower our people. The Public Protector can conduct own initiative investigation as well to check, but okay, Department of Trade and Industry, this was supposed to have happened, and this was what was allocated. We can conduct that own initiative investigation, even if there's no complainant in that particular case. So I think I was meaning in that particular respect to say it's for us to be exposed to that and making sure that what government has promised to be doing, and again, in the medium-term strategic framework, because then it's utilized to make sure that the outcomes which are mentioned there are implementing what government is committing to be doing. And Mr. Bongo, Public Protector Act requires a fit and proper person without fear and favor and prejudice. What is your understanding? Being a legally qualified person, you have to be unbiased in whatever you are doing. Well, it means you are not subjective, but you are objective. Whatever you do it according to the letter of the law. Therefore, you don't favor one person above another person. You don't favor a certain department or organization on behalf of another organization. If there is a complaint, you need to be fair. You need to be without any bias. Therefore, that's what it means. But then a fit and proper person as well is a person who is not involved in any shady dealings, because if then you are not fit and proper, you have criminal records, you have been found guilty of some offense, or you have stolen some money, therefore, how would you make sure then that whoever poor person who's supposed to have benefited from the service which is supposed to be provided, will you be able, because that will cloud your judgment as a person. I mean, it's like a father saying to a child, don't drink alcohol, but you come home every day, you are drunk. So I think it's something like you need to be that person who's making sure then that you live or you portray a very credible life. So I think then the question of business interest, for instance, if I have a business and that business is doing business with a government department, let's say Thembisile Municipality, then all of a sudden you receive a complaint about Thembisile Municipality, then you see it would cloud my judgment then, because how would I investigate Thembisile Municipality if my company is providing cleaning service at Thembisile Municipality? I think then that's where then you need to be making sure then that you don't have any business dealings. And then on the issue of Mr. Maisel, explain the triple challenges, employment, poverty, and unemployment. I think I've mentioned as well that we've got the best constitution in South Africa. The unfortunate part about our constitution, I know it might be a very challenging thing to mention, is that our we had democracy, and our constitution was in such a way that Chapter 2 of the Constitution was providing for the rights, which human rights. And the challenge there was that it was saying everyone is entitled to the following rights, to the following rights, to the following rights. Therefore, making it impossible, because it says within the available or realizable resources, especially the socioeconomic rights of government. Then you find that when I'm saying the imbalances of the, especially a lot of our people are very poor, they are unemployed, and the living conditions are so not so good. And worse than that, you find a certain municipality is supposed to be providing a certain service, and the budget allocated for that particular service is not utilized for the benefit of that particular community, because then you find that it's not enough for us, because we need to address those imbalances. We need to create an environment for the locals or for the people to be able to exercise their right to not to be unemployed. For instance, come to issues of utilizing the local. We need to be seeing that more often. When I'm saying to redress the economic imbalances, for instance, in a local municipality or a school feeding scheme, for instance, where you find that you'll get somebody who's coming from Gauteng to be providing a feeding scheme to a school in Mpumalanga. Why not use the local community, form a cooperative, assist them to be the ones who are assisting that particular school in their vicinity? That's what I'm saying, to address that, right? Because sometimes people are not going all out on their own, but they need government's assistance, like your local councillors or your local municipality, making sure that they are assisted in that particular respect. Therefore, going down to that particular level and making sure that the resources allocated to empower that community is utilized effectively. Again, it still links to the issue of maladministration, because I'm saying if then we have proper administration of our finances, we don't have any undue benefit. Therefore, we will be able to redress these imbalances. Chairperson, the relationship between the public protector and government, which needs to be supportive, is clear. The Constitution says public protector is an institution which needs to support and strengthen constitutional democracy. But then what steps do you need to take to fulfill the mandate and make sure that it is not antagonistic? Again, it goes back to the person who is unbiased, who is not prejudiced, who will do her job without any fear or favor, because at the end of the day, it's not a question of saying we must have now that cozy relationship. If work needs to be done and investigation needs to be done, because again, it's not an issue of saying you are being accused. I mean, the way it's done is you give us your side of the story. There is this allegation, give us your side of the story. It's discussed and we find a solution to that particular issue. I think it's more of making sure that we use our expertise of how can we resolve that conflict in a very amicable way. I mean, as South Africa, we've managed to do that instead of maybe throwing stones at each other, but then sitting around the table and saying, these are my findings, and as government or whoever is being investigated, then you indicate. I think it's a question of being transparent and as well acknowledging where we are not going in a proper way, and saying, but here we thought we are on the right track, or this is what the law is saying. But then as a public protector will say, this is our role, this is our function, and this is what the law is saying. I think finding an amicable solution to work together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mukwebane. I must say that the way you've been answering, it's been very...
Well, it is indeed a long process to electing the new public protector. 14 candidates being interviewed live from Parliament. We will be keeping you updated as far as that goes, as these proceedings are expected to go well into the night. We now take a quick recap. Are we taking?
He's nice and relaxed now. Thank you, Honorable Mngwabe. So I'm going to take that as the last round. And after they have, after they've asked all these questions, you will do like you did. You did very well. You will answer, and then if you could also try at the end to make sure that you leave us with those punchy marks that you want us to remember when you leave. Okay. Over to you, Honorable Pongo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I have two questions. One question, I would want a comment from the advocate. In the report before me from Corruption Watch, it says that she has 7 active business interests. I wanted to comment on this investigation by Corruption Watch, because this investigation, it may either prove her to be wrong, or it may less authenticate submissions that you get from Corruption Watch. Then the second question, it is not a...
You have read that that sentence and you did not finish it.
No, I deliberately
yes. Did so.
Yes.
Thank you. Proceed, Honorable Pop.
And then out of my own investigation now, I'm unable to confirm the Bachelor of Laws from the University of Limpopo. Can I get a comment? Because from my report here, on my investigation, the degree is still pending. They can't confirm whether she got that degree at the University of Limpopo. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. The next member.
Thank you very much, Chair. Advocate Tim Kwebane, good afternoon. Suppose you are appointed as the public protector in this country, and how would you respond to a complaint and an allegation of financial impropriety against a public office bearer of the national legislative arm, bearing in mind that the public protector is accountable to either to Parliament, actually? So how would you respond to those allegations of financial impropriety? Thank you very much.
Honorable Shivambu.
Thanks.
It's like I took you by surprise.
No. I'm always ready. I'm always ready to ask sensible questions. The operative word in your self-description of who you are, well, it's prestige and all those things, but you say you're apolitical. What is that? Are you not a member of any organization? Have you never been a member of any political organization? You've never even been organized in any organization that is in pursuit of political struggles. I'm also interested in knowing if you've got proximity to any politician who serves at the national level, so you'll clarify that. And in terms of the apolitical, when you are answering the question of what are the key challenges that are confronting South African society, you make the following 3 political statements, and I want you to explain them. Number one is that government is not taking a radical approach to address the economic imbalances between the races. What do you mean by that? And what would be the radical approach in your own vision? And then the second statement that you make is that the Constitution, though being the best in the world, never assisted citizens to enjoy the benefits of democracy as citizens, but it was open to everyone. That is what you say. It's a political observation. What is the meaning of that? What are the limitations of the Constitution in addressing the conditions of the people? And then the other statement that you make is poor service delivery, especially in local government sphere, and lack of responsiveness to people's concerns is part of the major causes or the major challenges that are confronting societies. I want you to dwell on that and give context to your apolitical nature. Then the second kind of question is, how are you going to decidedly deal with the question of accessibility of the public protector's office? Because earlier when you responded, you asked questions. You responded by asking questions. Why don't we? Why don't we? Why don't we use Power FM? Why don't we do that? Why don't we use magistrates? I want a definite answer of what are you going to do if we can appoint you as a public protector to make sure that all local municipalities, lots of maladministration happens and misuse of public resources. Okay, what are you going to do to make sure that all ordinary people who do not have access to internet, who are in far-flung places, in Umhlabeya Lingana, in Malamlelo, or wherever, what are you going to do to make sure that they've got access to the public protector's office? And the other issue will be on the funding model. When the public protector, the incumbent public protector came to the last appearance in the portfolio committee, she was speaking about a new funding model because there was recognition from everyone else that there isn't enough money that can be appropriated for the functions of the public protector's office due to a variety of things that define the sitting government. What funding model are you going to look into that is not entirely dependent on the state? And lastly is the issue which we have asked everyone on, the Executive Members Ethics Act. What will be your role in enforcing that, in light of the fact that when the public protector made findings with regards to violation of the Executive Members Code, she faced a lot of hostility from members of the ruling party. They called her a CIA agent and a variety of things. So you have to give us a response in that regard. Sure.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Shivambu. Honorable Motapo, I do agree with your question preceding the last one.
Okay, thank you.
I agree with your question that precedes the last question. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Motapo. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Horn, you want to ask a question as well? Was it up? Okay, you must raise your hand. I must see it. Okay.
Always.
Honorable Motapo, you are on the floor. I've noted you, Honorable Horn.
Afternoon, Advocate Mkweban. Okay, thank you, Chair. In your CV and presentation, you made mention of the skills that you have, leadership and management. You overemphasized that. But what you didn't mention is the qualities or attributes which are needed for such a very important position. And again, I'm very much concerned on page 20. Yes, Busiswe Mkweban, yeah, it's you. On page 20, despite the attacks, they still come. It's in bold. Then there are statements whereby at a forum you advocate said that the department didn't know about the Musina Refugee Detention Center. Then the following day, the DG, the Home Affairs DG, Mabuso Msimang, released a statement confirming Home Affairs association with the center. And then, working as a team, teamwork, according to me, is very, very important, especially in relation to the position of a public protector. So taking it from that background, where you come from, can you then comment on this statement, taking into consideration your non-mentioning of the qualities, attributes that you have in relation to this position? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Hon, I'm just going to give you a moment to ask the question. Just be crisp so that she can respond quickly, and then we can bring another candidate. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, my question actually relates to the question of the Honorable Bongo. There seems to be a difference between the dates in the questionnaire of the different qualifications of Advocate Mgwebane and her CV. So if she can just explain that to us, please.
Those questions are straightforward, and you've been taking notes, and I'm giving you the opportunity now to respond. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Bongo, I think I've indicated earlier that as a public servant, every year you declare there's financial disclosure. I think what Corruption Watch found, because if you can patch my ID number on the CIPC website, the way I mentioned earlier when Mr. Korenhoff asked, I said I was a member of several other companies which never had any dealings, because if you can check, all those companies are deregistered. I think when the amendment to the company law came into being, there were a lot of companies which were deregistered, which were never active. I think I didn't see any reason for me to mention those companies. And I indicated to Mr. Koronov that there's only one company which was active because it was a social club to open a bank account, and then that company as well doesn't have any dealings with government. That's one element. I never mentioned that for that particular reason. And I don't have a BA law. I have a BProc degree with the University of the North, and I'm surprised why it's never confirmed, and I wonder why. How can I do an LLB with the University of the North and then not having a BProc, which is highly impossible? I studied from the University of the North from 1989 to 1992. After that, I studied my LLB from 93 to 94. Which then we had to study BProc for 4 years and then LLB for 2 years. Therefore, I'm wondering why it's like that, and I wouldn't have been able to study at the University of Joburg, which is Rau by then, to do the higher diploma in corporate law if you don't have a junior degree, and I wouldn't have done higher diploma in tax law if I don't have a junior degree. So I think then, because the student number is the same for both BProc and LLB, that is my submission. And then on the issue of financial impropriety.
I thought I should just clarify the thing. You see, when we verify qualifications, we go from source. Mm. So your status is saying pending. It's not saying you don't have. In other words, maybe your source, this source, the university, has not yet responded to us. Yeah, that's what it means. It doesn't mean that you don't have. You may have, but they just wanted to get confirmation from you.
Okay, because I've also, I can also submit there. It's so strange why they did that. But the LLB, it means they confirm. Thank you, Chairperson. And then on the financial impropriety, national legislative accountability to Parliament. So if a member of the national legislature, the Public Protector has a legislative mandate to investigate in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act, to investigate members of the executive, which is the president, the ministers, the deputy ministers. Therefore, if there's any complaint as far as them are concerned, which relates to maladministration, abuse of power, undue enrichment, impropriety, therefore the Public Protector will be able to investigate that. And on the issue of being apolitical, meaning I don't belong to any, I'm not a card-carrying member of any political party. Being a South African citizen, I've got the right to vote, and my vote is my secret. Therefore, writing the statements to say, oh, whether I'm having any proximity of any politician, no, I don't have any politician who's the proximity, I am not sure in which sense, but I don't have any member of the family who is a politician. I've worked with a number of politicians whilst the Department of Home Affairs presented amendments to Refugee Act, engaged on when traveling with the minister, but then not the, I don't know which kind of proximity, but then I don't have any which is not proper. But then it's a question of being a public servant, doing my work, which I'm appointed to do. Political statement, radical approach. You know, I'll mention an example. I told my child to say, or my children to say, I think government needs to stand in the gap for the communities. Well, being in China for 4 years, it also has taught me that you bring the services, you make it possible for ordinary people to enjoy whatever you are providing. The radical approach, unfortunately, I'll use an example which is sometimes not, which is controversial. The 90% access, like the issue of SABC introducing 90% for local content. For me, that's a radical approach because you are saying, I'm making the environment accessible for you as local artists. So that's what I was saying, that can we then make sure that we have that. Citizens, like the issue of the Constitution, it was drafted and we said everyone, because if you check chapter 2 of the Constitution, it's only the right to vote and the right to exercise trade, which says every citizen. And if you check a lot of constitutions of the world, you find that it says every citizen. So unfortunately, as South Africa, we said everyone. And everyone, remember, being an asylum seeker, yes, we need to make sure that we protect you. But you might be an asylum seeker who's an economic migrant and you have primary health needs, you are protected in terms of our constitution. Yes, we've acceded to all the conventions. We need to provide that. But what I'm saying is that there are issues where we'll find ourselves where we never made sure that we only provide this to citizens. For instance, a lot of countries like China, for instance, you won't buy land. You won't not being a citizen. So that's why I'm saying we still a country, a democracy, which is still growing, which we can learn a lot of this. And it was not mentioned based on the issue of political, but it was mentioned on the issue of what one is experiencing. Poor service delivery, it was more on the challenges which we're facing. Again, being the National Director of Refugee Affairs, having to deal with a lot of challenges of foreigner attacks in 2008, because then, or even when there are service delivery protests, unfortunately, you find that they are impacted. Therefore, I think I mentioned it in that context to say sometimes we don't need to leave things until the last minute, but we need to deal with them as and when they happen. Accessibility, yes, as a public protector, I'll make sure that I engage the SAPC, I engage radio community radio stations, I engage them to make sure that they deliver the information directly to the people. By saying, making sure as well that in every magistrate's court, because it's available at Umhlabuya Lingan, that magistrate court should have an official. If it means Department of Education, Department of Justice, seconding or availing one of the clerks to be able to take that complaint of ugogo emakhaya, then that needs to be happening. That's the strategy I will do. Again, engaging churches, because churches are in our local communities, making sure as well how can we utilize them and work with them to make sure that they assist our communities and utilize civil society as well. The financial model which we can use, because we are dependent on the state and government's constraints and cost-cutting measures. The main important thing as well is that because the services we are providing as a public protector are services which are provided to the poorest of the poor. Again, we wouldn't expect to say let's charge any fee for us to raise our finances. But it's to make sure then that, for me, it doesn't need us to raise any funds. For me, it's to make sure that the very same available resources which is allocated to government, as I said, why do we need to employ more investigators or people to take complaints if we can make sure that we utilize the clerk in a court to make sure that they accept the application. For me, it's coming up with innovative ways of making sure that the minimal resources we're having are the resources which we are using. Unless, yes, there's a special investigation where we need additional funding to approach possibly the National Treasury to make sure that they fund us for that particular need.
Can you move towards closure?
The executive members' ethics.
Advocate.
Okay. Okay, I'm closing, Chairperson. Executive Members Ethics Act, the hostility, I think that I've addressed to say the public protector has a mandate. It's there in terms of the member Executive Members Ethics Act for the public protector to investigate or to make sure that executive members are complying to the code. The qualities and attributes, I've mentioned them because on my presentation, I also mentioned that with my expertise and I've got a lot of experience implementing or enforcing the law. I've mentioned the issue of being a good communicator, being a proper and fit person. The Musina Detention Center, I think that's, again, the question of saying, how was that placed into putting it into context. Department of Home Affairs was not running the center. The center was established by the SAPS by that particular time, because a lot of Zimbabweans were running into the country, or they were arrested along the borderline. They were placed there. But then with the negotiations, it was an issue of saying the communication between SAPS and the Department of Home Affairs in making sure that whoever is kept there is processed by the department, because a lot of them were kept. I don't think it was an issue of saying possibly I've mentioned one thing and the DG mentioned something which is totally different. Unfortunately, again, he's not here to say I mentioned this in what context. Finally, different dates. I don't know whether Chairperson, can I clarify which dates were mentioned? Because my CV was submitted by a person who nominated me, and there were issues where she changed several things into another format, and possibly then there is instances where there was a unfortunate dates confusion. Possibly that's why. So finally, I'm the ideal person to be the public protector with my expertise and my experience and being a public servant because I know how it is to serve. Therefore, I will serve my country with all my might. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mkhwebane. That concludes our interview with you. We will be in touch with you as soon as the committee has deliberated. We thank you very much for your time, ma'am. Thank you. Members, the next person is going to be Miss Jill Claudel Oliphant.
Can we take a break for 5 minutes?
Yeah, we are going to take, we can take a break. Yeah, no, don't worry, don't stress. We have the tea there. We can take a break, but can you guide me? How long do you want to break for, members? Okay. You have 5 minutes break, members, and please reconvene here after 5 minutes. And do serve yourself some tea. So long.